It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there as well. You'll get the first look at all of our upcoming guests, our most recent podcasts, and our most recent op-eds. Go over to Facebook and give us a like. We greatly appreciate that as well. On the website right now is our voter's guide, and thank you to all of you that have reached out and noted your appreciation for that. This is a good tool for you as you sit down and fill out your ballot. Rick Turnquest and I spent a lot of mental time, a lot of conversations, a lot of research to come up with this voter's guide, and be sure and use that as you are filling out your ballot. And also tonight is our event over at Water's Edge Winery, where Rick and I will be going through our voter's guide. Tickets are still available. You can buy those at my website. They're $20 plus a $3 processing fee. And then your food and drink is a la carte. I know that Jen and Chef D have some great things planned for you tonight. So we'd love it if you join us. It promises to be a robust conversation. You can buy your tickets there. Great event on Saturday with the I'm a Trumpsters out at 88 Drive-In Theater. That was a lot of fun. Steve, you and your lovely wife showed up for that.
Yeah, really cool. Spending some time with Reggie and Johnny, they just have such a unique character and their mission that they're on. It kind of almost reminds me of the Blues Brothers to a degree. But and lots of other neat people. We're rubbing elbows with a lot of other really nice people.
It was a great event, and they have a show on KLZ 560 on Sunday afternoons from 4 to 5 p.m. Be sure and listen in. It is most entertaining. We've got a great show planned for you today. It is our health and hydrocarbon show. And my friends, reliable, affordable, efficient, and abundant energy helps everyday people like us thrive and prosper. And it's so interesting that that is actually there's an assault on that, and we need to continue to understand what is happening from a public policy standpoint on that. So we will be talking with Tom Petrie in the third and fourth segment. He is with Petrie Partners, which is a boutique investment banking firm that is helps with the oil and gas industry, and he'll give us an update on the energy markets as well as what he thinks about the election. And in this first segment, we'll be talking with Douglas County Commissioner Laura Thomas. She's running for re-election. And then in the second segment, late breaking, we have a listener who prefers to remain anonymous. But she has been going through and researching what has happened regarding the shooting that happened down by the Denver Art Museum a week ago Saturday. And Lee Keltner was killed there. And as they're going through some of the video frames on this, we're asking the question, what and why? And as we look at this, it starts to look like perhaps Channel 9 News and the Denver Post might be somewhat complicit in what happened. And we're going to go through that. She's got a lot of good information on that as well. We look at these issues, my friends, as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. And if something is a good idea, you should not have to force people to do that. It is so important to put our thinking caps on, particularly with what is happening in America right now with this whole Hunter Biden emails. This projection that we have seen, projecting onto Donald Trump Ukraine, or projecting onto Donald Trump collusion with the Russians. What we found that it has actually been the Democrats, Biden, Hunter Biden, that has been doing that. And I hope that it's not too little too late, Producer Steve, as this information is coming out.
Yeah, I read through this and it just kind of got me really fired up again. Wear your blood pressure monitor as you read this and watch what happens. You know, the basis for the impeachment was that the president had pressured the president of Ukraine to launch an investigation into the energy company Burisma for the purely political process of hurting Joe Biden. Now, if the trove of emails from Hunter Biden's laptop are accurate, they have, and they have not been disputed, you know, then this argument really falls apart, which goes back to the whole basis of the impeachment. It was a sham. You know, can you take it back? I don't know.
Well, and Fox News just reported this, that there is a source on this email chain that verifies the message about the Chinese investment firm. When this first broke, I thought, okay, a laptop left someplace in 2019. Could this really be true? But the first thing, and Patty had mentioned this, is that the Bidens did not come out and immediately discredit it, which is a very interesting point. If it wasn't true, they would have been out in front of that saying it wasn't true. Then we see that there is someone that was on that chain that is verifying this. And it is dirty is what it is, Steve.
Well, if they are accurate, then it's more than clear that Biden or Hunter Biden was absolutely selling access to his father and the Obama administration in exchange for that $50,000 a month salary.
It is absolutely astonishing. And I was talking with someone this weekend, and they talked about Trump fatigue. And I am hoping that people are, and this has just been, it's been constant for the last 4 years, ever since he won the election. It has been constant for the last 4 years. But my friends, you have to look at these issues and understand that our country is really on the ballot. America is really on the ballot this November. And we need to make sure that we vote, that our friends and our family vote. We vote for the American idea. We vote Republican. And even if you may not totally agree with that Republican candidate, once they are elected into office, stay engaged with them. That is our civic duty. I always like to say thank you to this great team that I get to work with, and that is producer Steve, Zach, Keith, Patty, and Charlie, all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting, as well as you listeners. You each have a purpose. Today, strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. Our quote for today is from Herbert Hoover. He was an American politician, businessman, and engineer who served as the 31st president of the United States from 1929 to 1933. A member of the Republican Party, he held office during the onset of the Great Depression. He was born in 1874. He died in 1964. He said, "It is a paradox that every dictator has climbed to power on the ladder of free speech. Immediately on attaining power, each dictator has suppressed all free speech except his own." Can you say Twitter and Facebook? On that note, I want to move over here to Laura Thomas. She is Douglas County Commissioner. She is running for re-election. Commissioner Thomas, welcome to the show this morning.
Good morning, Kim. Thanks for having me on.
Most definitely. Tri-County Health was busy this last weekend. Adams County and Arapahoe County has instituted stricter restrictions on their citizens. What is your take on all this, Commissioner Thomas?
Well, Kim, we have seen a spike in cases, and we're talking about the number of cases that are people that are testing positive, because so many people are getting tested, and it just makes sense that as you increase the number of tests, you will increase the number of positive cases. One thing that the Douglas County Commissioners have really been focusing on is the severity of cases, because if people are testing positive, but they're not ending up in the hospital, is that really a reason for us to be shutting down our economy again? So we've been talking with Dr. Douglas, and he has started to agree with us that severity is what we need to be watching, and you don't see Douglas County involved in these recent restrictions.
Thank you, first of all, Commissioner Thomas. You were really out at the forefront, really leading on this particular issue in coming to an agreement with Tri-County Health to keep Douglas County open. And you can see that that has been a very good thing for the citizens of Douglas County. I had talked to an candidate for Adams County Commissioner, and he's been so concerned that these shutdowns are really affecting people's lives. It's affecting their businesses. And unfortunately, sometimes these health departments are not taking into the complete picture. Laura Thomas, you mentioned something that I think is very important. They talk about the increase in cases, and I asked her, I asked Dr. Jill Vecchio about this, and she said the first question when somebody says they've tested positive is, are you sick? And then secondly, was it a viral test or was it an antibody test? And it seems that Tri-County has been lumping all of those positive test results just into that particular group of I guess, data. And then they're using that to shut down the economy. And I'm glad that you're asking more questions on this, Commissioner Thomas.
Thank you, Kim. We just know that it's the balance of everything involved that we need to look at. I have got citizens reaching out to me that their children are depressed, that they have seen their children really suffer through all of this. And I have been saying from the very beginning, we need to look at everything in balance with each other, because we cannot have a cure that is more devastating than the disease.
For sure. One other thing I'd like you to address, we've got about a minute, and that is your view of law enforcement in Douglas County and SROs in schools.
So after the STEM shooting, we pushed for $10 million for more security in schools, as far as physical security and mental health programs. We also, the Douglas County Commissioners, added another $3 million for school resource officers. Last week, the Commissioners approved a contract for almost 25 SROs in schools for the school year 20 through 21 in partnership with the school district. There is one candidate in my race who is on the record on a video speaking about getting rid of SROs in schools. That is not me. As a retired state trooper, I understand that school security is a multi-pronged approach, and SROs play a valuable part in that piece, in that puzzle.
Thank you for clarifying that. My understanding is that your opponent has been trying to muddy the waters on that particular issue, and wanted to clarify just exactly what you've done there, Laura Thomas. I am recommending, we have 2 weeks, just basically 2 weeks left for this election, that people adopt a candidate and help a candidate. I know that you are adoptable. You would appreciate that help. Laura Thomas, how can people get more information about you?
My website is laurathomas.org, and it's LORA Thomas.org. And we have got a great Get Out the Vote, calling people, getting, reminding them to vote. So please go to my website and sign up to help us get that done. And we're always accepting donations as well.
And my friends, we cannot sit on the couch and sit in front of the keyboard. And unless in front of the keyboard, you are sending out, recommending to your sphere of influence who to vote for. In this case, Laura Thomas, I would recommend that people reach out to their friends and recommend a vote for you, Laura Thomas.
Thank you, Kim. God bless you all.
Okay, we're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, Hooters Restaurants is one of my great partners. They have five locations here in the metro area: Loveland, Aurora, Lone Tree, Westminster, and Colorado Springs. And every October, Hooters goes pink for the fight against breast cancer. This year, Hooters across the U.S. are working to raise money for breast cancer fundraising. Their goal as a company, not just Hooters Colorado, but for the entire company, they're hoping to raise $1 million. Last year, they raised $700,000. So there's five things that you can do. This year, Hooters is working to fund breast cancer awareness by, one, you can purchase a pink drink. Two, you can donate $5 for the pink color change cup. You can fill out an endowment card, and your name will be on the wall. It's a dollar donation for that. You can round up the change on your check, and you can purchase some specialty pink themed merchandise. And so be sure and go over to help Hooters Restaurants raise $1 million for breast cancer awareness. And they do have lunch specials. And a lot of people didn't realize this, but their fish and chips are delish. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with an anonymous listener who wanted to break down what happened in Denver a week ago Saturday. Stay tuned.
Metropolitan Total Property is more than landscaping. Locally owned and operated since 1987, their team is proud to be your neighbor and live in the community. Metropolitan Total Property stands behind their work, and your complete satisfaction is their top priority. Kim Munson highly recommends Metropolitan Total Property for landscaping and more. She was one of their very first clients way back in 1987. Be sure to check out MetropolitanTotalProperty.com for their complete menu of services. Again, that's MetropolitanTotalProperty.com.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lauren Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests, our most recent podcast, our most recent op-eds. You can buy your tickets there for our event tonight. Rick Turnquest and I will be over at Water's Edge Winery going through our voter's guide, which you can also find on the website, KimMunson.com. On the line with me is a listener. She prefers to remain anonymous, but she is very concerned about what happened a week ago Saturday down at the Denver Art Museum when Lee Keltner was killed. He was shot in the face. And as she has looked at this, there's big questions about what is the role of the Denver Post and Channel 9 News. Thank you so much, anonymous listener, for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Let's just go through this. You have really taking a look at this. So walk our listeners through this, please.
It's confusing because there's so many players. But as it turns out, after the fact, we have learned that the shooter was actually hired by 9 News as a security guard. But he was carrying a gun, and he was an unlicensed security guard. But initially, the Denver Post put out a story that said a left-leaning protester killed a right-leaning protester. That was the gist of their headlines. And immediately, Representative Leslie Herod tweeted that they needed to take this down because it was unconfirmed. So first of all, I'm concerned that we have a representative government trying to silence or control the media. That was my first concern. And then the Denver Post did change the headline after her request, which is also concerning. But as we later find out, the shooter is hired by 9 News. And if you watch lots of videos from throughout the day, there it seems to be almost coordinated between the media stalking what they hope to, you know, incite some sort of news story. So there's a line between covering the news and creating the news, and I wonder where that's drawn with both the Denver Post and 9 News in this shooting, because there's lots of footage of the camera person for Denver Post being in almost every scene whenever there was a confrontation between the shooter and two agitators that were wearing Black Guns Matter shirts. And I'm wondering how many of the viewers and how many media outlets or the police are investigating the coordination between the news stations and the agitators. Did the Denver Post hire one of these people as a security guard because they're seen following them everywhere?
My understanding is as people have looked at a bunch of the video from that day, that it actually looked like the media and these agitators would huddle together and talk. And you mentioned some names to me. Is that something that you want to put on the air or not?
Well, Jeremiah Elliott was listed in the arrest record as one of the agitators, and he was approaching conservatives throughout the day. He was wearing a Black Guns Matter shirt, and he had just had a face-to-face confrontation with the victim when in his face screaming, "Shoot me." The entire day was very hostile with these agitators trying to provoke a fight, and it seemed that Nine News and Denver Post were there every time. And as soon as Jeremiah Elliott was out of, you know, the Lee Keltner was the victim here, and as he walked away from that confrontation, he walked right into, a few feet away, the shooter, who then again started arguing with him, and it was almost like it was coordinated.
Now, my understanding is the Denver Communists, and in fact, a listener had sent the flyer to me Thursday before. She was concerned that there might be some kind of violence, and they were having a soup can drive. Apparently, there were some people that were feeding soup to people there, but yet there were soup cans that were being thrown at police. Is that correct?
Yes, there's video of some people in the soup drive that was coordinated by Black Lives Matter and then other groups like Denver Communists, as you mentioned. And several of these people have ties to Antifa. Jacob Telly, also an agitator, who's got an arrest record and as being at protests and destroying property, was someone who helped organize this soup drive. And he's on record as, you know, yelling F the police and very anti-police, anti-conservative. And he was also in the face of people like inches away screaming at them and trying to incite violence.
It looks to me, from what you've told me, that in fact they were trying to incite some kind of violence. Now, there was a police line, correct, between the Denver Communists, that whole group, and the Tigan group. It is curious how these people actually then were on the side of the Tigan group, and the only way that would have happened was if they were with media, correct? Am I connecting a dot correctly?
I would think so. It's the throughout the day, there was a fence and a line between the two groups, and the Tigan group had left shortly before the victim was shot. So it went without the shooting, and then after they had left is when Lee Keltner had gotten confronted by Jeremiah Elliott and then walked right into the shooter, Nine News security guard. But I think it's interesting that the Denver Post and Nine News were everywhere, huddled before on video and throughout the day. And I'm wondering if the police confiscated cell phones and cameras from Nine News and Denver Post, because to many people, it looks like they are inciting violence and are connected to this and should be investigated.
Well, and let's just think about this, anonymous listener, that emotions, the event was over, but yet these people that you mentioned, they have been, you know, calling names and getting people in people's faces, and different people react to that. And from what I understand, then this, Jeremiah Elliott was really right into Lee Keltner's face. And when Lee Keltner walked away, he walked right into Matthew Dolliff. And that does seem somewhat curious that that could happen.
It does. And when the shooter was arrested, you have footage of the Denver Post photographer asking police, "Where are you taking my guy?"
Oh.
And it raises questions of whose guy is she talking about? And it's also curious that when the Denver Post had all these photos, they didn't release them immediately. And when they finally did, two photos were missing from the Denver Post reporter camera note. That was actually the photos of the shooting itself. It looks like the shooter is reaching towards the waist of the victim at the same time the victim then reaches up to slap away the shooter, and then the shooting occurred. And it's curious that that hasn't been looked into as to what he was reaching for.
Who should be looking into that? Would that be the DA, or who should be looking into this?
Well, I hope the DA is looking into it, but it's interesting that the Denver Post said that the shooter had no affiliation with left-wing groups, when the shooter, Matthew Dolloff, clearly has social media posts of saying he's a supporter and a leader in the Occupy movement in the 2011-2012. He's anti-Trump and anti-police, so it's interesting that that would even be a security guard that they hired. Did they not do a background check? And then it's also interesting that Denver Post still hasn't said that, yes, actually, we were wrong. He did have ties to the left. And
so what we are looking at, give us your final thought on this. It looks like what we are looking at is that, as you mentioned, I think the big takeaway here is, instead of covering the news, the question is are they creating it? And as they're doing so, somebody lost their life.
Exactly. And instead of reporting the news, the Denver Post and Nine News continue to support the shooter and support the agitators like Jeremiah Elliott. They had Jeremiah Elliott on the news afterwards on Nine News saying he was a victim, saying he just happened to be walking by, when there is clearly video of him screaming at other people. And when, after the victim was killed, there appears to be a video of Jeremiah Elliott screaming, "Yeah, one less."
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I'm not going to repeat it, but right. It's bad. So who's investigating the coordinated attack of this? And are the news complicit? And are we letting news now incite violence? We need to change this mindset of, if you're against my religion or against my color or against my politics, I have the right to shoot you.
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you, anonymous listener, for walking us through this. Let's stay on top of this. I'm not quite sure exactly where this is going to go, but first thing is this, to shed light on it. So thank you so much for reaching out.
Thank you.
And we have Jason McBride back on the line. We were just talking about, this is really serious stuff, Jason McBride.
You know, if I was on before or not, but I had said I know a couple of folks that were fairly close to what happened down there. And, you know, the opinion there is that if it wasn't for Nine News, Mr. Kellner would still be alive.
Yes. This anonymous listener mentioned, that's a difference between covering the news and creating the news. Jason McBride, as we're going into the next 2 weeks of the election and people are talking about taxes, Trump's tax cuts, you proved it, leave more money, a lot more money, in everyday hardworking Coloradans' pockets. And I would highly recommend that people go to our landing page together, airpresidential.com. That's airpresidential.com. You've done an excellent analysis on that. And people need to be armed with that as they are engaging in conversation with their friends and their family and their colleagues the next 2 weeks.
I think that's a good point, Kim. You know, there's an awful lot of things that we might debate about that are, you know, kind of ethereal. You know, they're not based on math or numbers, and it's hard to, you know, prove some things in black and white, but this is something that's not hard to prove. All you have to do is look at what the, you know, the tax rates were and what people would have paid or whatever in the year before the Trump tax cuts, and then you compare the exact same income and number of children and all that to the very next year when we had the Trump tax cuts, and the numbers don't lie. I mean, you know, sometimes numbers do lie, but these numbers don't lie because it was a very simple comparison, and I think it is something you could show to people in black and white. Now, whether they'll choose to believe it or not, I can't fix that, and neither can you, Kim, but at least you could be armed, right?
That's for sure, and that's a great piece. So go to airpresidential.com to download that. That's airpresidential.com. Jason McBride, thank you so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
Have a great show, Kim.
Thank you. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll talk with Tom Petrie with Petrie Partners. He is an investment banker with the energy sector, oil and gas, and find out what he thinks about is happening in the energy markets now and what the election looks like. We'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
The silent odorless killer, CO2. Your house has a monitor. Does your mask? Masks can actually be pretty dangerous, according to the National Institutes of Health. They say that inhaling high levels of carbon dioxide, CO2, may be life-threatening. OSHA does not recommend masks in oxygen-deprived environments, specifically elevations over 3,000 vertical feet. The mask mandate is not for your health. It's killing you one breath at a time, thanks to selfish Governor Polis, paid for by FECUnited.com.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, KimMunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
When politicians want to raise taxes, they're supposed to give you a say in the matter. They're not supposed to sidestep the law and make you pay more without your approval. But that's exactly what politicians are doing. And that's why we need Proposition 117. Proposition 117 gives us, the taxpayers, a voice. It allows us to vote on large fee increases, which we all know are just hidden taxes. For far too long, politicians in Colorado have raised the cost of car registrations, health insurance, and even hospital stays without giving voters a choice. They get away with it by calling their cost increases fees instead of tax hikes. Voting yes on Proposition 117 would change that and stop the hidden tax hikes. Vote yes on Proposition 117 to give Coloradans the voice they deserve. Paid for by Unite for Colorado. Katie Kennedy, registered agent.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can get first look at all of our upcoming guests, our most recent podcast, our most recent op-eds. We do have our voter's guide there. You can download that. And this evening, Rick Turnquest and I will be over at Water's Edge Winery going through our voter's guide. We'd love to have you join us. You can buy your tickets at KimMunson.com. On the line with me is Tom Petrie. He is with Petrie Partners, which is a boutique investment banking firm offering financial advisory services to the oil and gas industry. Tom Petrie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Kim. Good to be here.
Lots happening since we last talked, Tom Petrie. What is happening, do you think, in the energy markets? How is that relating to the election?
Okay. Well, we're getting some signs of recovery in the business. They're very early and somewhat fragile. Rig counts are up, surprisingly, but that's good. China's showing signs of economic growth and better control of the impact of COVID-19. Europe's a big question mark, and the U.S. is in a recovery that lags China somewhat, but on the mend. As I look at the election, 2020 is a year of decision, and the choices between the two candidates are pretty stark. And I think if we look at three ways of thinking about it, there's the post-election uncertainty driven by what's going to happen to financial markets, and that largely relates to the questions of taxes. Climate change initiatives, that is a big difference between the two candidates, with one believing that climate change actions have to be done very very rapidly and disruptively, I would say, on one side, and a more analytical view of it, I think, on the other side by the current president. And then finally, the most important is the geopolitical positioning. We're in a very fragile reorganization of the globe. China and Russia are now more aligned than they've been in a very long time. They have a shared enemy, and the threat that they see in the U.S. with its values and its approach. China has certain objectives with respect to consolidating its positioning. We've seen that in Hong Kong, and I think, depending on the outcome of the election, a real test for the U.S. on Taiwan could be in the offing. The Middle East, North Africa is in a serious challenge period. Right now, Libya in particular, the civil war there, could have implications. So it's a challenging time. It'll be a year of decision, depending on the election outcome.
We have gone through when we were talking about it yesterday, you said we've gone through the abyss. Let's talk a bit about that, Tom Petrie.
Sure. Good point, and it's worth keeping in mind. The abyss that we were looking into in March, April of this year, was pretty severe. Basically, a falling apart of a role between Saudi Arabia and Russia on stabilizing the oil price was a big thing. We were looking at very short-term, big declines in demand. And as a result, oil not only dropped from the mid-50s to 40, when the signs of that falling apart occurred, 40 quickly broke 30 and tested actually below $20 a barrel. We've come way back. You know, we've more than doubled the low end of the range. We're now stabilized or relatively stabilized right around 40. Every time oil dips below 40 now, say 38 or 36 to 38, self-correcting forces kick in. And I would argue that if we were to get a recovery, as some of this economic recovery that I talked about occurs, oil could get back up into the high 40s, low 50s, but I think then self-correcting forces on the demand side are likely to kick in. But we have seen a good recovery vis-a-vis the almost depression expectations that were there prevalent by the end of March.
Tom Petrie, as you're talking about this, we have had conversations. This is our Health and Hydrocarbon Show, which I think we take it for granted in America, but reliable, affordable, efficient, and abundant energy helps everyday people thrive and prosper. And it's been just astonishing what has occurred since you and I first started having conversations. As you mentioned, we went through the abyss. I remember sitting here at the microphone as we're talking about what had happened with China, with Russia and Saudi Arabia, and what that was doing to our local producers here. And it's so interesting as we've walked through this experience, Tom Petrie. And what do you see happening here for our oil and gas producers here in the Rocky Mountain region?
Well, there's some very local disruptions. The state of Colorado, in its regulatory oversight, is pushing for much bigger offsets, separation, if you will, of wells to be drilled, setbacks, and that's going to be counterproductive. you know, just for a longer-term perspective, a decade ago, we produced under 100,000 barrels a day of oil. And at the peak, we were beginning to flirt with something close to 500,000 barrels a day. And now we're in a decline by virtue of some of the regulatory issues and certainly impacted by lower prices. The producers are working hard to get their cost structures realigned with today's economic prices. And as a result, we're now starting to see, not just in Colorado, but onshore across the U.S., companies that are doing a better job of at $40 a barrel than they were doing even at $50 or $60 a barrel. So the industry itself, the private sector, has adjusted as much as it can to that. But the regulatory oversight is a challenge. One of the things that will be one of the reasons I think of this as a year for decision by the electorate is there's some risk that those who are concerned about climate change, and I'm not saying that there isn't a challenge there, want to go so rapidly to renewables that they will adopt all kinds of things that would further challenge our traditional supply. But pretty careful analysis of the next two decades, from now certainly out to 2040, even 2050, would suggest there's going to still be an important role for fossil fuels providing the bulk of our energy needs. Yes, we're going to have some renewables grow up and so on, but the global picture is still one where the needs of non-OECD nations are going to offset the transfer over to renewables to some degree that's occurring. And we should be really careful about trying to force the future sooner than it will unfold under rational economic analysis.
There's that word force that we talk about all the time, Tom Petrie, freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Right. If something's a good idea, you shouldn't have to force it. And let's go to break. This is Kim Munson. I'm talking with Tom Petrie with Petrie Partners, who he's in the investment banking side of the oil and gas industry. This is our health and hydrocarbon show. We know that reliable, affordable, efficient, and abundant energy helps everyday people thrive and prosper. We'll be right back.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, kimmunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You will get first look at all of our upcoming guests, our most recent podcast, and our most recent op-eds. Go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. And buy your tickets for the event tonight. Rick Turnquest and I will be going through our voter's guide. We analyzed all 11 of the ballot questions on the Colorado ballot, and we're going to go through that tonight over at Water's Edge Winery, and you can buy your tickets there. On the line with me is Tom Petrie. He is with Petrie Partners. It's a boutique investment banking firm offering financial advisory services to the oil and gas industry. And this is our health and hydrocarbon show. My friends, I think we take it for granted that we have this reliable, affordable, efficient, and abundant energy. And it helps us thrive and prosper. It helps everyday people live better and better lives. And public policy is being put into place that is actually going to increase our energy costs significantly. And that really hurts young families out there trying to, you know, make things, you know, pay for their everyday lives, take care of their families. It is really going to affect them. So we want affordable and reliable energy. And public policy can actually tap that down. Tom Petrie, Patty, my researcher, located a piece in the Foundation for Economic Education. It's a piece by Daniel Mitchell. And he says that Venezuela has had an economic collapse. And the New York Times published an 1,800-word story about that, but they never mentioned socialism. And at gas stations now, lines go on for miles. The country that a decade ago was the largest producer in Latin America, earning about $90 billion a year from oil exports, is expected to net only $2.3 billion by year's end. More than 5 million Venezuelans, or 1 in 6 residents, have fled the country since 2015. It's created a tremendous refugee crisis. But instead of actually talking about socialism, they talked about mismanagement, years of gross mismanagement. Hugo Chavez appeared on the national stage in the 1990s, promising a revolution that would put Venezuela's oil to work for its poor majority. Now they don't even have any rigs, I think, operating. Tom Petrie, what's your comments on this?
Well, it's what we're talking about is a case study in systemic impoverishment of the people. And it truly is an indictment of socialism. Where we ended the last session talking about forcing things that that don't make economic sense. This is another example of that. This one has a geopolitical overlay as well. I touched on China and Russia being aligned now, even though some argument that in past times they were natural enemies or certainly natural competitors with one another. But now they have this shared enemy. You know, in the U.S., in how they look at the U.S. as an economic system. And so Venezuela, they have a stake in keeping Venezuela disrupted. And that's why they're supporting the failed policies, both of Chavez and then his successor, Maduro, who's even more draconian in his measures. And why? Because for Russia and for China, and interestingly for Iran, sustaining that kind of a leadership in a failed system helps them challenge the U.S. and keep the U.S. somewhat distracted from other agendas they have in North Africa, elsewhere in the Middle East, and in the case of China, across the Pacific Rim. So it's really a very, very sad situation. You're right about the refugee crisis. Several million people migrated out of Venezuela the easiest way they could, which was to Colombia, and then they actually, there's been some studies on this about their migration then up through Mexico and so on into the U.S. in some cases. But it is a really serious problem, and Venezuela, if natural forces were allowed to work, would have been a failed system, and a replacement would have come in, because before Chavez came in, Venezuela was one of the leading. It was one of the leading founders of OPEC, and it did have a prosperous economy. But under the experiment that we've seen over the last decade and a half, it's a case study in failed economic mismanagement. So in that sense, the New York Times is not right. But to avoid admitting that socialism is part of the flawed performance, to fail to recognize that is a big oversight.
It is a really big oversight. I remember I had friends from Venezuela back in the 70s and 80s, and the country in the 70s, it was thriving and prospering. And now people are, I think the piece said that that Venezuela has the second to lowest level of economic liberty according to the Index of Economic Freedom. People are suffering. And ultimately, socialism makes everybody equal in their misery. And this is an excellent case study. And people think that that can't happen here, Tom Petrie. But it, I think it could. What's your thoughts?
I think we have to recognize that there is a risk there. and as big and strong as our economy has been, if you reach a critical point where you weaken the systems and you weaken the incentives for human endeavor, human creativity, and human responsibility for their own actions, if you weaken that, you can get a systemic failure. And there's no better study, in my view, in the last three decades of that than what happened. PDVSA was the leading national oil company in the world 25 years ago. It was looked up to by all the other oil exporting countries because of the way it had things together. Its technological proficiency was considered the rival of some of the better private run oil companies, or public oil companies, but private sector companies. And that ceased to be about eight or nine years ago, and the slide has been precipitous since then.
Okay, question regarding the campaign. Joe Biden has said that he would not ban fracking, but yet he did say he would ban fracking. Kamala Harris said she would ban fracking. What's your thoughts on that?
I think they're fine-tuning their message to the electorate so that in key states that they want to win, that they need to win, if they're going to be successful, like Pennsylvania, they began to realize, gee, let's not let our earlier statements that helped us win the primary hang us out to dry here in the real campaign. And so it should be taken with a large grain of salt when he very softly says at that softball interview we had last week, no, I'm not against fracking. And then he slipped in a little word. I'm not totally against fracking. And what he was saying there, and he used a slightly different word, but that's what he was saying. And basically all he was saying was, my first step will probably be just to reassess whether on federal lands we should be fracking. And then he can come at it in terms of some kind of health and safety factor, and then work his way through it. But basically, it's a very deceptive way to approach the electorate.
We've got just a couple of minutes left, Tom Petrie. And speaking of deceptive, what happened here in Colorado, 2 years ago, the voters voted down Proposition, I think it was 112, which would have been for oil and gas setbacks from dwellings. And then about three months later, after the election, Governor Polis changed that. He started to have, I think, more draconian setbacks. But something has happened just recently, and we've talked about it on the show, and that is the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission is recommending 2,000-foot setbacks. So what the voters voted down 2 years ago is actually happening through rulemaking, or close. Is that correct?
It is correct. And, of course, Governor Polis, before he was governor, was behind some of those earlier initiatives that failed. So he's chosen make his opinion and his policy trump the public sector. And there's nothing that's happened since then that would suggest that there's some compelling logic to this. He's simply, he's anti-fossil fuel development. There's no question.
Okay.
And so the key point of that, just going to what I said a while ago, 500,000, 475,000 barrels a day drops down to 400, 300, 200 in the coming years. And where do we find the funding that this state needs for a lot of its expenditures? They're going to talk about how the renewables will replace it. They're dreaming in terms of the time frames that it'll take to do that.
Renewables don't pay taxes, and oil and gas did. And what you're talking about is the declining tax revenue that money has gone towards schools and roads and libraries, and how will they make that up? Tom Petrie, what is your final thought you want to leave with our listeners this morning?
Well, let's think about the issues, and we need to vote effectively. Both this is an election where decision-making about the leader of the country and about the Senate is critical. And I think we have a senator who's being challenged, but I think his record suggests that we should weigh it heavily in our thinking about who we vote for this year.
Most definitely, and you're talking about Senator Gardner. I'd recommend a yes vote on Senator Gardner. Vote for him. Tom Petrie, thank you so much. I greatly appreciate it. And my friends, being a politician, this is a quote from Herbert Hoover. He says, being a politician is a poor profession. Being a public servant is a noble one. So today, my friends, be grateful. Read great books. Think good thoughts. Listen to beautiful music. Communicate and listen well. Live honestly and authentically. Strive for high ideals. And like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.